This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm your host, Heather Vail. Today I'm speaking with Mark Chinook, founder of the Monday's Dark Fundraisers and The Space, the community-driven, charity-based arts complex that hosts them. Chances are you've seen and heard Mark around town, if not at Monday's Dark, then perhaps in Rock of Ages, Magic Mike Live, or announcing at Vegas Golden Knights games. On May 12th, The Space is showcasing the life of Stephen Sondheim in a one-night show to support the Actors Fund. Hey, Mark, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate you giving me this opportunity.
Yeah, of course. So let's go back a few years. What was it that prompted you to start Monday's Dark and The Space?
Yeah, so you mentioned Rock of Ages. That's the show that brought me out here to Las Vegas. And, I spoiled as an entertainer on the Strip, performing nightly in this really cool Broadway show. As entertainers in the Strip, we'd be invited to red carpets to make appearances for various nonprofits to help support. But the unfortunate thing for us is we could never stay for the event. We'd have to go back to the show and perform. And so I thought there's got to be a better way for entertainers to give back in Las Vegas. And so our schedule followed the traditional Broadway schedule where we were dark on Monday nights. So that's where Monday's Dark came from, the name. And basically it's a 90-minute variety show where anybody can show up, anything can happen. And in 90 minutes, we raise $10,000 for a different local charity. And we've thrown about 145 parties so far to date. So we've raised almost $1.5 million for the community. And it's just a goofy way for entertainers in town to give back to our amazing nonprofits based here in Las Vegas.
So how do you know you're actually going to raise $10,000 in 90 minutes at every Monday's Dark show?
We have an awesome support team. You know, we have a great fan base now, and we sell anywhere from 200 to 300 tickets. Tickets always start at $20, so it's a very affordable donation to the nonprofit. And then there's a silent auction element at all of our events. We have between 30 and 50 items that people can bid on, and that helps us ensure that we get to that $10,000 fundraising goal.
Okay. So, you know, one of the cool things about Las Vegas is it's not like anywhere else. And one of the things that's different is not every show is dark on Mondays. Some are dark on Wednesdays or, you know, whatever day. So how do you get performers to take part in the show if they don't happen to have Mondays dark?
Well, sometimes they just come after. Sometimes they come before. You know, it varies. We have had approximately 400 or 500, I don't even know the number anymore, local entertainers and headliners from Los Angeles and New York take the stage at a Monday's Dark. So when we first started 8 years ago, it was calling entertainers to come out and perform. And now it's kind of 50-50 where they call us and they want to volunteer and donate their time to said cause. So it's been pretty cool to see it grow.
Cool. So what are some of the causes and charities that receive the funds from Monday's Dark?
We've partnered with, like I said, 145 to date. So chances are if I went through a list, you'd recognize, 50 to 90% of that list. Everything from local animal rescues, cancer organizations, humanities issues, you name it. We've partnered with them all, big and small. We love mom and pop nonprofits that, you know, operate out of their basement or their garage, because $10,000 to them means a lot more than $10,000 to a big, you know, a nonprofit. But like I said, we've partnered with 145 local nonprofits so far, and we have a wait list of approximately 250. And we pick 21 charities a year to partner with.
Wow. Okay. So tell us more about the Life of Stephen Sondheim showcase that's coming up.
Yeah. So as a Broadway performer, obviously Stephen Sondheim was influential on pretty much everybody in the business. You know, he wrote some of the greatest musicals ever, and in a style that is so unique to him. And, you know, we're bringing together the best of the best on May 12th from a Broadway community standpoint. We're going to have some incredible singers paying tribute to his life and his work. We're going to try and feature almost a song from every show that he's written. And 100% of the proceeds will go to the Actors Fund, which is the nation's largest entertainment-based nonprofit, supporting everybody in the entertainment business from wardrobe, crew members, singers, actors, dancers, stage managers. It doesn't matter. The organization is called the Actors Fund, but it really supports everybody in the entertainment business. Mm-hmm. And we've had a great relationship with them in the past. During the pandemic, we raised $120,000 for the organization. And so Las Vegas is on their radar. We do a lot of work with them, and their programming to support the entertainment community is just truly so special. And to be able to continue to support them and the work they do to support the entertainment community, it was just a perfect fit. We knew we wanted to do something to honor Stephen Sondheim. And mm-hmm. partnering with the Actors Fund just made sense. So an incredible lineup of entertainers coming to the space to pay tribute and honor him, and then also to raise money for such an incredible cause.
So this is a separate show, not on a Monday. Does it work similar to a Monday's Dark show?
Yeah, it's similar. It won't be a Monday's Dark show. Monday's Dark is really a party. You know, mm-hmm. it's a variety show where really anything can happen. And this is more of a presentation of the work of Stephen Sondheim. So it's a concert and the proceeds will go directly to the Actors Fund. So at the end of the day, it's a show happening at the space that will benefit a nonprofit. So in that respect, it's similar to a Monday's Dark. But from the show itself standpoint, it's completely different. We're gonna honor this incredible creator, artist, that so many Broadway performers and, you know, anybody really who's a fan of musicals he's really deeply missed. And I don't think there will be anybody like him to come along. So it's something special for Las Vegas to pay tribute to him. And in doing so, raising money for a great cause.
What are some of your favorite Stephen Sondheim musicals?
Ooh, that's a great question. You know, I'm a big Sweeney Todd fan. Yeah. I think many, many people are. Into the Woods, another one. You know, recently West Side Story got a lot of play with the film, and, you know, he was a part of that. We can go on and on. Merrily We Roll Along, Company, Sunday in the Park with George, I think is just a masterpiece. So you're going to hear music from all of those shows. So it's going to be something special.
Nice. Okay, so how do people get tickets for The Life of Stephen Sondheim or find out more about upcoming Monday's Dark shows and other things that might be happening at the space?
So the space's website is easy. It's thespacelv.com. Our entire lineup is there. And then for all things related to Monday's Dark, again, simple website, Mondays with an S, mondaysdark.com. So thespacelv.com. mondaysdark.com. Monday's Dark has a landing site on the space as well, which will connect the two. The space is an incredible venue right off the strip, Polaris and Harmon. It's really intimate. And we have things happening here 3 to 5 nights a week. There's something for everybody. And Monday's Dark is always every other Monday featuring a different nonprofit.
Nice. So if they go to thespacelv.com, they'll see a link to get tickets to the Stephen Sondheim show as well?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. So once again, The Life of Stephen Sondheim is going to be May the 12th at The Space. You can get tickets at thespacelv.com. And Monday's Dark charity fundraisers happen every other Monday. Find out more about what's coming up at mondaysdark.com. Mark, I want to thank you so much for being here. I know you've got a super busy schedule. You're like all over town. On any given day, people can see you on multiple stages. So thanks for taking a few minutes to talk to us. I really appreciate it.
No, we really appreciate you. Without you know, your support and platforms like this, nobody would know about what we're doing. So the feeling is absolutely mutual, and we couldn't do what we do in the community without your support. So thank you for the opportunity for a few minutes to talk about what we're doing. We're passionate about giving back to the community, and we love Las Vegas, and anything we can do to help our community, we're going to continue to do. So thank you so much.
Cancer screening can save your life. Begin cervical screening at age 25. At 45, colorectal and breast screening. At 50, discuss lung screening with a doctor. Find resources for free and low-cost screening at cancer.org/get screened. This is a public service message from the American Cancer Society.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and today I'm at the official launch of the city's Going Green for Good Health campaign, supported by the Mayor's Fund for Las Vegas Life. Mayor Carolyn Goodman is kicking off the campaign, which will support the city's initiative to plant more than 60,000 trees by 2050 in areas most affected by the urban heat island effect.
Good morning, and welcome to the City of Las Vegas East Yard Tree Nursery. I'm Dr. Lisa Morris-Hibbler, Chief Community Services Officer for the City of Las Vegas, and I'm delighted to welcome you here this morning to help us officially launch Going Green for Good Health, an initiative to plant more than 60,000 trees by the year 2050, particularly in the areas of the city most affected by the urban heat islands. This campaign launch is particularly timely with Arbor Day just 2 days away. Our Setting the Day, the East Yard, is where the magic happens, where scores of trees are lovely grown from seedlings, and where trees and plants of all kinds are cared for by our capable staff and ultimately planted throughout our beautiful city. Much has been written lately about the urban heat island effect, and Las Vegas, by virtue of its climate, has one of the most intense. There are areas of our city, East Las Vegas, for example, where trees and tree canopies are markedly lacking. And as a result, the heat island effect tends to be greater in those locations. And that's why the City of Las Vegas is proud to launch Going Green for Good Health, an initiative to grow and plant more trees, particularly in areas where they're needed the most. Our goal, to increase the city's urban tree canopy to 20% by the year of 2035, and of course, hit our goal of having 60,000 trees planted by the year 2050. While trees are needed everywhere, we are paying close attention to the areas most impacted by the heat island effect. And that's just one reason why this program is so exciting. Its results are visible, tangible, real, and not to mention beautiful. Here to tell you about the benefits of the trees is Bradley Daisler, the city's own urban forester, who has the coolest title in the city, by the way.
So yeah, our trees and green spaces do enhance overall community aesthetics, build community pride, and help to mitigate undesirable views. But they're not all show and no substance. They also deliver very real, significant environmental and health benefits to the communities and citizens who live there. For starters, trees release water vapor from their leaves, cooling surrounding areas. This is Mother Nature's version of air conditioning. And the shade they provide results in further cooling and reduces energy consumption, most significantly during the hottest part of the day. In fact, the overall cooling effect of a single mature tree is equivalent to 10 air conditioning units running for 20 hours. Trees also improve air quality by removing a long list of pollutants from our air. In exchange for that, one large tree will provide a day's supply of oxygen for up to 4 people. And finally, trees have a positive impact on mental health and personal well-being. Trees in nature have a calming effect, which has been shown to lower blood pressure, improve mood, and reduce stress and anxiety. I and my team are looking forward to growing and planting thousands of trees throughout Las Vegas.
This is Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm with Bradley Daisler, urban forester with the City of Las Vegas. So, Bradley, why is urban forestry important in a city like Las Vegas?
Yeah, so when we grow and live in a city, trees provide a lot of benefits that people want to be around. So we have parks and green spaces, but people want their streets to be shaded. It makes living in a city like Las Vegas, or I guess any city, more comfortable and more beautiful, and they just provide a lot of benefits that people want to be around.
Typically, Las Vegas is known for its palm trees, but we're standing amidst non-palm trees, deciduous trees. What's the projection for planting more trees like this around the city?
So yeah, with the 2050 plan, we are trying to plant 60,000 new trees within the city of Las Vegas. So that's on our streets and parks and other city properties. And so we're constantly growing trees. As they get to maturity, we're finding sites on those properties to plant those trees. And we're going to continue doing that even well past our 60,000 tree goal.
How do you decide where the trees should be planted?
I just look around in the parks. So, you know, we're looking for vacant spots that have space for a tree to mature. So we know a lot about the trees. We know what to expect from them or what to project for them mature size-wise. And so we're spacing them out in spots where we think that they have the best chance to fully develop and give us benefits from those places.
Okay, and what does it take to care for a tree that's not native to the desert when we're in the desert?
The trees that we're selecting and we're trying to grow are coming from places with similar climates that we can expect to do well here. So just because a tree isn't native to Las Vegas doesn't mean there aren't other similar climates where it's adaptable. So we're selecting those trees. We're not trying to bring in trees that are going to need an exceptional level of care, because honestly, we don't have the resources to do it. So we have to put in trees that we think are going to be tough, that are going to grow, and that are going to provide benefits, as many benefits, as few of problems as we can.
And just offhand, what are a couple of the species that fit those criteria?
We are finding that there are a lot of really drought-tolerant oaks. And we're also finding that there's eucalyptus, a lot of eucalyptus species that are unknown here, but that are could be very productive and very healthy trees. We have hackberries and elms, and there's just so many varied locations that we need to put trees in, from parking lots to parks, that there's a lot of different opportunities for a lot of different species to do well here. Even we have an Afghan fig tree here that's incredibly drought tolerant, that maybe no one's ever seen before, but there's more trees than you could imagine.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
It is my pleasure to introduce someone who needs no introduction, Mayor Carolyn Goodman.
Thank you. Gosh, it is good to be mayor. Let me tell you how exciting it is to be in this city. This is not anything but a red letter day. It's even better than that. It's a green letter day, and an exciting day in which we launch our new campaign, Going Green for Good Health. There's no denying that trees are good for our environment, for our health, for our souls, and obviously for our communities. And this campaign to fund and plant trees is obviously resonating with many in our community, given the strong interest we have received to help us make Las Vegas go green. When we launched the Mayor's Fund for Life in 2018, we envisioned that the fund would support programs just like this one. The Mayor's Fund is in its fourth year, is a way for the private sector, individuals, businesses, foundations, and nonprofits to support city programs and initiatives that improve quality of life. And we can think of no better program for the Mayor's Fund than Going Green for Good Health. Best of all, there are opportunities to donate at a variety of levels to purchase seedlings or more mature trees that are ready for planting, our nursery items. Individual trees can be purchased as an honorary, memorial, or celebratory tree to commemorate birthdays, other important milestones, or the passing of loved ones. Trees are neutral, they are bipartisan, and beneficial to everyone. Just one more reason why they are so universally beloved.
This is Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm speaking with Mayor Carolyn Goodman. Why do you think initiatives like this are so important to the city of Las Vegas?
They belong to Las Vegas. The future generations, our generation today, it's such an exciting time, and we're such a cooperative group of people. We love being together. We're so accepting of each other, and it's just a great place to live every day of our lives.
Thank you so much for this initiative of planting more trees in the city. We really appreciate your efforts.
Well, you know, it's a wonderful time when you have a birthday in the family. Instead of giving something that ultimately will be thrown out, give a tree, buy a seedling, and we can all do something, and then you can take your family to visit the tree. It's wonderful, it's permanent, and it's the future.
That's so great. Thank you so much.
Now I have the pleasure to introduce someone that I first met at the Nevada Legislature, but I will tell you that this woman definitely goes hard for her ward. She is very much in tune with what her residents need. She is all about ensuring that resources are available in her community, and right here where we are today is Ward 3. So I'd like to introduce Councilwoman Olivia Diaz.
Good morning. Thank you for being here in Ward 3, joining us. Thank you, Lisa, for those kind words. Thank you, Mayor, for your leadership in your very, very long tenure and at the helm. And this is a product. All of these programs that we see come to fruition is because we've been always focused on making sure that we're driving our city forward. I want to thank the donors. Without you, this event wouldn't be possible. And I want to thank Bradley for his work that will continue to have its impact many, many years. I'm proud that the city of Las Vegas has long been a supporter of planting trees in our community. Back in 1912, women led the charge at the Mesquite Club and planted 2,000 trees. And the Mesquite Club is still in Ward 3. So think about that history. It's been over 110 years that women planted 2,000 trees here in our community. And I hope some of those trees are still around, because I bet you they're providing a lot of shade and a lot of amazing clean air. Also, starting in 1989, the city of Las Vegas has been recognized as Tree City USA by the Arbor Day Foundation. So again, it speaks to our merits of trying to do our most on this front. And so today I really see it as a continuation and elevation of all of our hard work and commitment to ensure that we continue to add to our tree canopy, and we try to fight and combat the heat island effects that we've heard about, incrementing, and especially here on the east side of our city. This is an area that we can be doing better and that we need to continue to support.
At this point, I'd like to acknowledge the first three generous donors to our Going Green for Good Health campaign. First up is Subaru of Las Vegas, which has committed $50,000 to the tree program. Subaru has already donated $10,000 this month and plans to give $5,000 each month for the rest of the year. That's quite a difference. Here to share a little bit more about Subaru's commitment is Burton Hughes, General Manager of Subaru of Las Vegas.
Subaru Loves the Earth is a creed by which we conduct our business every day at Subaru of Las Vegas. It's a core value of the brand Subaru, and it also informs the way that we build partnerships with our community. Great partners like Envy Energy and the Hughes Corporation to do stuff like this, to really write the story, because we all are a part of writing the story of Las Vegas. One day people are going to look back and be able to trace all the beauty and the green that they see around them. They'll be able to trace it to an initiative just like this. Mayor Carolyn Goodman, it's an amazing opportunity for us to be a part of. And on behalf of the Finley family and the entire team of Subaru of Las Vegas, it's an honor to be a part of it and to just champion this great cause of going green for good health.
Our next donor is no stranger to the Mayor's Fund, having donated to many other city programs and priorities through the fund. For Going Green for Good Health, the Envy Energy Foundation has donated $25,000. Please join me in welcoming our advisory board member, Tony Sanchez, Executive Vice President, Business Development and External Relations for Envy Energy.
I have the wonderful privilege of representing the Envy Energy Foundation today. Our foundation is really made up of what our employees want to focus on, what the priorities are to them across Nevada. We take our role as community participants and community supporters very seriously. We're really focused on decarbonizing our power generation over the last dozen years. And we're very proud of the fact that we can announce now that in the past dozen years, we have reduced the carbon output of our generating equipment by close to 55% statewide. Had the pleasure of serving on the Mayor's Life Committee for the past several years. And I said, let's look at that tree program. But what worries me is we're in the middle of a 20-year drought. And is planting trees, is that, does that make sense? And of course, with the research that you had already done, these are very highly drought-resistant trees. So that is not a concern for folks. But it is important. East Las Vegas is the least shaded area. I'm proud to be having been born here in East Las Vegas, and anything we can do to continue working in our partnership with you, Mayor, and with terrific community partners like Subaru and Howard Hughes, you can count on us.
This is Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm with Tony Sanchez from Envy Energy. Our listeners have all heard of Envy Energy, of course, but what exactly is the Envy Energy Foundation?
Sure. Our shareholders fund the foundation every year to put dollars back into the community to great nonprofit causes all around the state. So we generally look to see where our employees are, where their passion is with different nonprofits, but we fund everything from the environmental causes, STEM, a lot of K-12 as well as higher education.
Foundation. We got to train our future workforce with those dollars, and everything from health and human services we fund, and the arts. Certainly over the last couple of years with COVID and everything, we've had probably less emphasis on the arts and those kind of things, and we've been focusing on basic needs like food and housing and energy bill assistance, and we continue to do that, but we get to spend in excess of about $6 million a year on all those, and that's probably the most favorite part of my job.
I don't think a lot of people associate NV Energy with clean energy and with environmental causes. Why do you think it's so important to be behind initiatives like this?
We need to support the communities we serve, but at the same time, it's our job to get the word out that we're number one as a utility in the country when it comes to solar energy, and we're number three when it comes to geothermal usage around the country. We've reduced our carbon output by close to 55% over the last dozen years. And we've done that all without raising rates the past decade here in Las Vegas. So it's been very important to us. But we're going to continue that. We have to be at 50% renewable by 2030. We're going to meet that. We're currently at close to 31% statewide right now. But we've got to get to ultimate goal. The state's ultimate goal is zero carbon by 2050. And we're well on our way to making it. And we've got to do our part. And the new area that we're looking at is the electrification of vehicle transportation. So electric vehicles and infrastructure that's needed to power up all those cars all over the valley. We recently filed a case with our utility regulator and asked, we're spending $100 million. 51% of that is going to be in low income and economically disadvantaged areas that traditionally haven't seen the amount of infrastructure that some other places in the state have. And, you know, we're going to put battery chargers in apartment buildings. We're going to put it everywhere where anybody that wants a car, and they're becoming more and more affordable now. That's going to keep us busy for the next decade as we continue to harness all the terrific sun that Nevada has. We're very fortunate to have as much land as we do in Nevada to be able to really build all that solar affordably, as well as wind power, geothermal, you name it, we're doing it at NV Energy.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our third donor is the Howard Hughes Corporation, another generous corporate donor that is given to the Mayor's Fund programs and initiatives. For the Tree Initiative, the Howard Hughes Corporation has donated $25,000. Here representing Howard Hughes is Danielle Bisterfeld, Senior Vice President, Marketing and Consumer Experience for Summerlin.
I'm proud to be here on behalf of the Howard Hughes Corporation. As a community developer, we understand the importance of partnering both in with municipalities and our other partners in the private sector. And we also understand the importance of trees. As we plant them throughout our own community, we're happy to give back to East Las Vegas and in other areas that the city deems needed for more trees. And I think to sum it up quickly, Shel Silverstein said it the best in his book, The Giving Tree. Trees create shade for protection from the sun. Trees are sources of nutrition via fruits like apples and oranges. Trees have trunks for climbing and playing. Trees provide a place to rest for birds and other creatures. Trees provide wood for building and growing. In other words, the gift of trees are many, and we're proud to be here with you today, and thank you guys for being here as well, and we look forward to all the trees being planted.
So on behalf of the City of Las Vegas, the Mayor's Fund for Las Vegas Life, and the Going Green for Good Health campaign, we thank you all for being here today to share in the launch of this program that will benefit our entire community, especially those who live in the areas where trees are lacking.
Every year, thousands of youth age out of foster care with no permanent family and no safety net. Visit DaveThomasFoundation.org to give children lingering in foster care a brighter future.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and today I'm speaking with Debbie Palacios, Executive Director for Communities and Schools of Nevada, or CIS. Debbie's an accomplished education leader with nearly two decades of experience and a former director with the Clark County School District. She began teaching with CCSD in 2005 and has held various positions, including English Language Learning Specialist, Title I Facilitator, and Director of Family and Community Engagement Services, or FACES. Debbie, congratulations on the new position, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So could you let us know exactly what Communities in Schools does?
Absolutely. So Communities and Schools is actually the nation's leading dropout prevention program. Nationwide, the organization is about 5 decades old, but here in Nevada, I am telling people that CIS is an adult now because we're 18 years old here
nice.
In Nevada. So started in 2004, actually through the efforts of Miss Elaine Wynn, who is our founding chairperson, who really learned about CIS through the founder, Bill Milliken, and realized that it was something that was really important and needed here for students in Nevada. So she brought CIS here in 2004, and we started with one school, Martinez Elementary, where we are proudly there today. Currently, we're in 57 schools, and I mentioned that it's a dropout prevention program, but it's important to note that we are actually in elementary, middle, and high schools, because frankly, we know that students don't necessarily get up one day during their high school careers and say, oh, you know what, I think I'm going to drop out. There are barriers and obstacles and challenges that have occurred truly in their K or pre-K-12 educational journey, and so we want to make sure that we provide supports all along the way. So the model of CIS is to put a caring adult into schools, an additional caring adult. We know that our staff and our educators and our teachers in schools do wonderful things, but we also know that we could use more caring adults in our schools, and that's kind of where CIS bridges the gap. So we put a full-time site coordinator at each of our schools, and at our high schools, we'll put 2 site coordinators. And what their job is to really identify any barriers that are in place for students, any obstacles, and really work with the student and with families and the community and the school to remove those barriers. So the barriers can really be anything from transportation challenges, food insecurity. Maybe a student isn't coming to school and has attendance issues due to not having school uniforms, or they have issues with housing. And so really looking at all of those basic needs that a student has to have met before they can even engage in learning, and really working with students to be able to remove those barriers so that a student can be academically successful.
How big is the problem of dropping out of school in Southern Nevada?
A lot of the problem sometimes too is because we are such a transient district, a lot of our students become what's called unaccounted for, right? They, you know, maybe they enroll somewhere else, but we can't keep track of them. So that makes our, really kind of inflates our dropout rate. But we do know that it is an issue here in Southern Nevada, particularly around, you know, socioeconomics, right? So students sometimes drop out because they need to provide for family. We are a 24-hour town, which is a little bit unique in our community. So that, you know, there are times where parents are not there during the day because of working hours. And so students are dropping out to stay home and take care of younger siblings. You know, it's a very multi-layered and complex issue here in Southern Nevada. So we really believe that it needs to be addressed in multiple different ways and multiple different facets. But, you know, we are constantly striving to have our efforts really impact those graduation rates. And so that we're able to see, is it being successful in our schools? How does it compare to what's happening, you know, in maybe a non-CIS school or across the state? And how can we continue to work with our districts in order to push those graduation numbers up?
And how do you decide what schools do become CIS schools?
That is a really great question. So I mentioned we're in 57 right now. Mm-hmm. And really the way CIS has grown in the past 18 years has been really kind of organic and grassroots. So a perfect example is that, you know, we would start at a CIS school. The program was really successful, but then maybe the assistant principal at that school became a principal at another school. They were promoted and became a principal at a school, you know, down the street. Well, then when they got to their school, they were like, well, we're CIS on my campus now. So they brought CIS to their campus as they, you know, kind of traveled and they moved schools throughout the district. So that's a lot of how we grew, is kind of word of mouth. Schools in the Clark County School District do have a certain level of autonomy where they get to choose what programs come on their campus. So a lot of it was word of mouth, principals talking to each other, sharing about the impact that CIS had on their campus, and then other principals wanting it. Now, based on our partnership relationship with the district and really trying to leverage some of those federal funds from the ESSER dollars in order to really provide wraparound services for students district-wide. One of the things we're doing is we're really trying to target our growth as we grow pretty rapidly these next few years to feeder patterns. So feeder patterns are basically schools that feed into each other within a community. So a perfect example is we would be in a community where we had CIS at the elementary level and we had it at the high school, but we were missing the middle school. So now through these more strategic growth efforts, we will be able to be at that middle school and then really provide that continuum of care for a student and their family. So for instance, if you know a student has the services in elementary, then they can kind of have that warm handoff to the site coordinator in the middle school and to high school and really have those wraparound services for them and their families throughout their entire educational career.
Okay. Besides the issue that you mentioned about parents working all kinds of hours and kids maybe having to look after the family, why is the issue more prevalent in schools with higher poverty levels?
So absolutely, we do see those issues in our more underserved or higher needs schools. We are currently in 57 Title I schools of the 360 plus schools in the district, but there are 260 plus Title I schools within the district. So certainly there's still a lot of need. But what we do see there is, again, that schools with high poverty levels, students are really experiencing sometimes a lot of trauma, sometimes things that are preventing them from even attending school or really engaging in their learning, right? So if they're worried about where their next meal is going to come from, that's really what's going to be at the forefront before they can get into anything academic, right? If they are wearing a pair of shoes that are too small, if they can't see the board because their family can't afford vision services, or if they have a toothache that's bothering them because they don't really have the access to dental care, like maybe, you know, a more affluent community might have. These are all things that are preventing a student from really having that opportunity to be successful. So that is part of the reason that that's really where we target our services. We also like to say we can make the case that for CIS at any school, anywhere, but certainly we want to target the ones with the greatest need first. And that would be in Clark County. It's our Title I schools.
What exactly is a Title I school?
A Title I school is really based on the percentage of students who qualify for free and reduced lunch. And the way that students qualify for free and reduced lunch is household income. So really, our Title I schools are our schools where students are living at or below the poverty line.
Okay. So as an organization, you're obviously doing a lot to address the problem, but how can members of the community help?
That's a great question. So one of the ways that we would love for the community to be engaged is for, first of all, just to learn about the work that we do. And a number of ways to do that. If you go to our website, cisnevada.org, there is a link to donate. So for some people, that might be donating funds or school supplies or hygiene products that will go directly to our resource rooms located directly into our schools, which again, just provides those basic needs for students. If a student needs school supplies, they can come and get those things, no questions asked, hygiene products, whatever it may be. Another way, of course, is to volunteer. So we have some volunteer opportunities. Sometimes our campuses need volunteers to help distribute new shoes to students or to help, especially during the holidays or different ways like that. There's lots of opportunities throughout the year where we look for community volunteers to help us. And finally, really, again, just knowing about the work that we do, we offer virtual site visits. So that's an opportunity for community members to engage with our site coordinators at the school, maybe hear from some students about the impact that CIS is having, and really just help us to continue the story. So we feel like the more that people know about the issue and what we're doing to address the issue, more people will be engaged in helping us make our students successful.
Okay. What's involved in the graduation campaign that's happening throughout May and June?
So a couple different things. This is a busy time for CIS, but for our graduation campaign, that is really, again, kind of our first initial finish line for our students, right? We want them to be successful, of course, beyond graduation and in college or career or whatever their post-secondary plan is, but graduation is certainly a big time. So one of the ways to help, of course, is to donate, and those things go towards graduation fees, caps and gowns, college application fees, anything like that, that can really help students kind of reach that next level of success. Currently, we are always looking for other ways that people want to engage with us during the graduation season. And that will always, again, be on our website. But we also put out kind of mini graduation campaigns throughout April, May, and June. And that is also advertised through our social media. So you can find us on Facebook and Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And if you follow CIS Nevada, again, that's another way to really be engaged during our graduation season. One of the other ways too, which I think is really exciting, as students kind of get ready for that next step, we also have a lot of mentorship opportunities and career exploration opportunities. So if that's a way that you want to be engaged with our organization and just maybe talk to students about your career and what's out there in your field, or actually sign up to mentor one of our students, those are all great opportunities really centered around graduation and beyond.
Nice. Okay. So once again, if you'd like to find out more about communities and schools of Nevada or get involved, either volunteering, donating, finding out more about the graduation campaign, the website is cisnevada.org, cisnevada.org. And Debbie, I want to thank you so much for being here today and for bringing awareness to the community about this organization and what you guys are doing and accomplishing. It's been great. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Heather. Really appreciate it. And we look forward to having more people be part of the CIS family. Thanks.
When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things, even committed some crimes, but I am not a criminal.
Youth Advocate Programs is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. Learn how at yapinc.org.
Hey, good morning. I hope you're having a wonderful weekend. My name is Nudia Hernandez, one of your hosts here on the Public Affairs Show here for Odyssey Las Vegas. And we're going to be talking about an event I am so privileged to actually be a part of. This is the Champagne Luncheon and Success Showcase for Dress for Success Southern Nevada. It's going to be happening Friday, May 6th at the Four Seasons Hotel here in Las Vegas from 12 noon to 2:30 p.m. To talk about the event and more about Dress for Success Southern Nevada, I do have Norma Intriago here with me, Executive Director of Dress for Success Southern Nevada. Hello, Norma.
Hello, Nuria. So good to be here with you all. Thank you for giving us this time and space.
No, of course. And I'm super excited. Like I said, I get to be a part of this event. I'll actually be DJing the luncheon that's going to be happening. But I know I was super excited to get on board because I've heard about Dress for Success in Southern Nevada. And I was excited to learn a little bit more from you. So what exactly does this organization do?
Yes, Dress for Success Southern Nevada helps women navigate the world of work. And our mission is specifically to empower women to be economically independent. How do we do that? We do that in multiple ways. What we're most well known for, and that is for the clothing attire. So we provide women with the professional wardrobe that they need so that they can move forward. But we also provide them with a network of support and the development tools that they need so that they can be successful, both not only in work, but in life. And so our programs really, the suiting, the clothing attire, right? Dressing that woman, making sure that she is visibly seen, right? And that she's not seen as less than if she doesn't have the dollars, right, for that interview suit. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That she is seen, and she has that visibility. So that's the point of entry, right? And then once she is employed, we provide her free of cost, obviously, our programming and services with a full wardrobe attire, a wardrobe capsule, so that she doesn't have to spend a penny on her attire, her professional attire, depending on the industry, right? We make it industry appropriate. And we address this. But the Beyond the Suit program is what's most important. And that is that oftentimes, right, when women are underrepresented and under marginalized and from underrepresented communities and underestimated, right? There is a barrier, an access, right? We're having to address equity here. We know what happens with our communities. It's not lack of potential, it's lack of opportunity. So we want to make sure that we address the equity. And so we want to democratize networks is what I say. So when I say that we give a woman a network of support, one, it means we're a sisterhood, right? So we're not only providing the professional clothing attire, but we want to make sure that you're receiving the career coaching, the mentoring, all the professional development tools that you need to be successful. And that's all the way to the top, wherever that woman wants to take it, all the way straight to the boardroom, right? It's not just about a survival job. It's making sure that women are thriving. And so when we democratize networks, we allow access, right, to networks that otherwise you wouldn't have. And so we are mostly primarily a volunteer-driven organization. So that professional career coach can come from Bank of America, can be an executive leader woman at MGM, from various industries, technology, and so on. And they're giving their professional business acumen in a way that's a concierge style. In other words, as if she were paying to be part of a club, right? And so she's getting professional career coaching, professional mentoring. She's getting a personal stylist for her image and her wardrobe, as well as her the career coaching. And so we're giving, but that woman is also opening the Rolodex. So we want to make sure that these supporters to these organizations are also partnering with us to create career pathways and career mobility for a woman that wouldn't have access, right? We cannot be what we do not see. And sometimes we need that door kicked wide open to address the barriers that oftentimes, right, women who live in poverty are faced with. Poverty shrinks your world. And so we want to make sure that we address these injustices and these inequities by democratizing those networks, by opening up those Rolodex, by giving them connections to all the professional women that are part of Dress for Success Southern Nevada that volunteer, and that we can have those internal advocates, those internal cheerleaders that are expanding that world for that woman so that she can be her best self.
Everything you said, and I know you gave us so much to divulge, and just to kind of recap, this is, you know, Dress for Success's mission. The mission of Dress for Success of Southern Nevada is to empower women to achieve economic independence, just like you were talking about, Norma. And unfortunately, a lot of times that comes down to, you know, professional appearance. There's this thing of when you go into an interview, they expect you to look like $1 million, even if you don't have it, right? Like that's the thing. You're trying to get this job and you have to look the part and people want to see that. But unfortunately, there could be so many things happening at home, so many things happening in the personal life that make that very difficult to achieve, you know? And that's something not a lot of people think about. If you, you know, have been lucky enough to have a closet full of great clothes or been able to buy a suit before interview, I think we've all been there. You've been blessed, but some people, that's a big hurdle for them. Yes. And again, we're speaking about Dress for Success of Southern Nevada. Their purpose, it's so much more than simply a new outfit. Their vision is a world where women do not live in poverty and are treated with dignity and respect. And you could help donate to that cause or go to the luncheon. It's going to be Friday, May 6th, over at the Four Seasons Hotel from noon to 2:30 p.m. It's their champagne luncheon and success showcase. And you're cordially invited. And thank you so much to Norma and Thiago. You have been amazing. And thank you for being on the show with us today.
Thank you so much. And we celebrate you too. Listen to the amazing talents of DJ Nuria. We're so excited to have you, another powerful woman that we'll be celebrating with. Let's enjoy and celebrate the resiliency of women in our community. And, you know, I believe that together we're so powerful and together we can accomplish so much. So please join in this beautiful cause, help uplift sisters. And this includes men. Men can be fabulous allies. So let's join in this incredible celebration. So hopefully I'll get to see you May 6th. If not, find other ways that you can get involved with the mission of Dress for Success at www.dressforsuccesssouthernnevada.org. Thank you so much.
I'm Julian Hive, President and CEO of United Way of Southern Nevada, inviting you to join me and Chet Buchanan to tee off for a good cause at our 65th anniversary Golf United Tournament on Thursday, May 26th at the Revere Golf Club. Buy your tickets today at uwsn.org/golf.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm your host, Heather Vail. Joining me today is local fine artist Ken Klein, currently showing his works at the West Charleston Library in a show called Ken Klein's Still Life. This is an opportunity to see a collection of oil paintings spanning over 30 years, with proceeds from his art sales going to charity. Ken, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
How did you decide to become an artist in the first place?
I mean, I always was an artist, like as a kid, drawing, and I took art classes in high school, but I never really thought about, you know, becoming an artist. And then I just, when I was going to college, I just started taking some art classes, and I got into commercial art more than fine art. And then I finished as a fine artist at UNLV. Well, that's pretty much how I got started. And then from there, I tried to, you know, become an artist, which is very difficult, but I ended up finishing my career as a sign artist, doing sign works and pictorials and stuff back when billboards were hand painted.
With your paintings in particular, how would you describe your painting style?
My painting style is sharp focus, still life, which means that you're trying to paint it real. It's not really photorealism, because photorealism, you're looking at a photograph and trying to recreate the photograph as it is. I actually have the object set up in front of me, so I have to spend a lot of time, you know, setting up still life and then preparing my panels, because I paint on wood and have to gesso those. It's a long ordeal just to get to the drawing on the panel. And so that's pretty much how I do it. But they are sharp focus still life with a trompe l'oeil, which means to fool the eye, you know, angle to some of the paintings. And that just means that some of the objects look kind of real when you see them from a distance. And then when you get up on them, you know, you check out the fine detail.
So how do you decide which elements you're going to compile into the scene that you then paint?
Pretty much the objects that I paint are things that have just been handed down from my grandparents, my parents, family members, and just things that I had as a kid and that I bought over my lifetime. I don't really go out searching for still life anymore. I just kind of use the stuff that we have around here. Lots of old antiquities. Sometimes it's newer things. And I just try to create a still life that I think would be interesting to the viewer, hoping it's interesting to me, and I'm painting, and I'm spending countless hours, which turn into weeks, which turn into months, on each painting. So that's pretty much how I get to the final piece that I'm working on.
So how long can people go and enjoy your art show at the West Charleston Library?
The actual exhibit will be there till July 5th, so April 26th to July 5th. And then I think they rotate it sometimes to other city library galleries. So it's a gallery system for the city of Las Vegas through the Las Vegas Libraries. That's where they have the gallery set up at. I guess they actually won Best of Las Vegas Gallery through that review journal.
So what charities are you donating your proceeds to?
I donate to a number of charities myself personally, but the ones that I'm kind of trying to focus in on now are Catholic Charities, which is the one that where Maine and Las Vegas Boulevard meet, where all the, it looks like they are inundated with a need. And a Care for the Kids Station, that helps families in need that are cancer patients. And the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Those are the three that I'm kind of focusing on now. I donate to them anyway, but this is if I get proceeds from any of the paintings. They can make their donation for the painting to that foundation. I'll donate my artwork.
Nice. Okay, and you mentioned that you used to do signs and billboards. What sorts of commercial art have you done around town that people might have seen and remember?
Probably the most common one would be I worked for the Las Vegas Stars and Las Vegas 51s for 34 years. So I painted those signs in the outfield all those years. So if they went to those baseball games, those AAA games at Cashman Field, they saw my artwork, along with a lot of other little signs I did for them around the park. So that would probably be the easiest one. Other than that, I just worked for construction companies and different businesses. Aside from that, for my
design career. It was 40 years long. So,
wow, that's a long time. So where can people find out more about your work if they want to look online and see some of your paintings or some of the other stuff that you've done?
I have it on Facebook. It's under Ken Klein Fine Art. And I think if you go to Facebook and just go to that, Ken Klein Fine Art, I think it'll come up and it'll show some paintings there. I don't really have too many things other than that because I don't have like a online store or anything like that. You know, maybe that's in the future because a couple people have asked me about doing that. But other than that, to go to the show, my AOL number is there so they can contact me through that. So if they go to any of the exhibits, wherever they are, they can find my AOL number there to contact me if they need more information.
Okay. So it's at Ken Klein Fine Art on Facebook. And if you want to go to the show, it's at the West Charleston Library, which is 6301 West Charleston Boulevard. That's at the CSN campus between Jones and Torrey Pines. And that'll be running through to July. Ken Klein's Still Life Art Show. Ken, I want to thank you so much for being here today. It's been great talking to you, and hopefully people can go and see your work and maybe purchase some as well.
Right. I think they'll enjoy it. I mean, it's probably a little different than anything they've seen. So it'd be great to have people go out and check it out.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives around the valley. May is Older Americans Month, and the Alzheimer's Foundation of America invites you to have a free virtual memory screening. These take just a few minutes and are open to all ages. Find out more or schedule your free memory screening at alzfdn.org. That's alzfdn.org. Aid for AIDS of Nevada, or AFAN, is hosting the 32nd annual AIDS Walk Las Vegas in person for the first time in 2 years on Sunday, May 1st from 8 to 11 a.m. at Sunset Park. This year's walk will kick off with a 5K run for the first time ever. Find out more at afanlv.org. The Space is showcasing the life of Stephen Sondheim with a special concert on Thursday, May 12th at 8 p.m. at The Space. All proceeds from the show will benefit the Actors Fund. Buy your tickets or find out more at thespacelv.com. Also at The Space, don't miss the bi-monthly Monday's Dark fundraisers. Upcoming shows include Monday, May 9th at 8 p.m., benefiting Project Maryland, and Monday, May 23rd at 8 p.m., benefiting Operation Homefront. Get all the details at mondaysdark.com. The United Way of Southern Nevada is hosting their 65th anniversary Golf United Tournament on Thursday, May 26th at the Revere Golf Club. Join Chet Buchanan and UWSN President and CEO Julian High to honor the legends and leaders trailblazing the path for future generations. Buy your tickets or find out more at uwsn.org/golf. Ken Klein's Still Life Art Exhibit is showing through July 5th at the West Charleston Library, located on the CSN campus between Jones and Torrey Pines. Enjoy this local artist's hyper-realistic oil paintings featuring historical pop culture subjects. Proceeds from art sales are being donated to charity.